Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
All right, we got a pretty cool day lined up for everybody here. Good morning. Good day. Managed to get this show actually started in the morning on all U.S. time zones by 3 minutes. I got you, East Coasters. I got you. Everybody else, it's an easy one. I'm Dan Vespers. This is Fantasy NBA Today. It's our Thursday morning recap show. We'll be going over what happened last night. Kind of a medium-sized Wednesday card. Medium card every day this week, which is honestly the way it should be. That's the way the schedule should be. We should have 6, 7, 8 games basically every day. No 13-game cards. That's stupid. No 1 or 2 game cards. That's also stupid. And I know, complaining on deaf ears, doesn't matter. You guys saw the thumbnail. He's been in there a few times lately. The great Keon Ellis will be at the center of our discussion today. We also had some injury news that floated in. We'll start the show, actually, with some injury news, which, sadly, is Jalen Johnson related. He's out at least a week, meaning if you're in your playoffs, you might not have a choice but to drop Jalen Johnson, which is just the worst. I think Yahoo has given him the injured tag, so if you're in a league that has a couple of extra injured slots, that's one day that maybe you might be able to dodge it so you don't have to wait any additional ball game. So I guess that was kind of like a little bit of a silver lining on the whole thing, that you can wedge him somewhere. But if you're out of injured slots, you're going to have a very difficult call to make. So that sucks. Crummy news of the morning. But don't worry, we have so much to talk about on the Keon Ellis front that you'll forget all about the bad news as we work our way through it. Follow me over on social at Dan Vespers. Please make sure you do that. And then also, please make sure you subscribe however you're taking in the podcast. Want to make sure that you guys are listeners, watchers, viewers, whatever you want to call it. Every day you can be. That's part of what allows us to continue growing. And with that, we embark upon this wonderful journey through yesterday's results. Miami at Cleveland will start at the front end and wander our way through. Jimmy Butler's back. Bam Adebayo's out. Who cares? I say, somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Also, just realized I don't have my water at the table with me, so we'll be taking a mid-show 20-second break to go fetch that. Butler, 37 minutes. Went all Jimmy Butler on everybody. This is what he does at this time of year. Weird rest of the lineup here, though, because no Duncan Robinson and no Tyler Hero on top of that, so it's sort of like this nesting doll situation. Thomas Bryant got the start at center, but he only played 15 minutes. Did have 10 rebounds in 15 minutes, but who cares? Can't trust a dude in 15. Nikola Jovic had 14 and 6 in his start at power forward. Don't care. Patty Mills had 10 points, a couple of steals in his 25 minutes of a start. He got a start in this game. Don't care. Jaime Jaquez tends to not be particularly valuable when Jimmy Butler is in. And then the big disappointment for me was Caleb Martin. I figured he would do more. He did play 32 bench minutes, but he didn't do much with them. He's a guy that if this configuration sticks for another ballgame, I might consider rolling a Caleb Martin out there, but you know, at best, you're talking about a 50-50 play. So probably this is just sort of like the goofy missing pieces. If Duncan Robinson was back, you'd play him. If Hero or Bam was in, you'd obviously play them. But you have the wrong guys out to create streaming value behind them. Caris LeVert, he's chugging along. He's working. He's trying to replace Donovan Mitchell. Easier said than done. Cavs are, I think, kind of running out of gas in terms of the how do we replace missing stars this year situation, because they've had a lot of missed ball games, and they've been able to hang in there for the most part. They went on that nice winning kick the first time everybody went down, but you just, like, Donovan Mitchell's at 49 games, Darius Garland's at 45, Mobley's at 38. Jared Allen is basically the only starter on this team. Now, Max Strus is out for a while, too. Jared Allen's the only starter that hasn't really gone down for any extended period. He missed a few games here and there, but nothing substantial. Oh, as far as what to do, obviously Caris LeVert is a go. George Niang is an interesting fill-in for Max Strus. It's basically for three-pointers. You know, 15 shots is good, but he doesn't do much besides shoot threes. And he does that relatively well, mind you, but there isn't a whole lot more to it. So he kind of has that Corey Kispert-level appeal. I thought Isaac Okoro would be better. And again, I think I'd probably play Okoro if someone came back out and was like, hey, Dan, everybody's going to still be out in their next ball game, and Okoro's going to get to play 38 minutes. I'd be like, all right, yeah, I'll probably play that dude. So bad ball game for Isaac, but overall, he's playable when he's getting this number of minutes. I think I'd like it better if LeVert was coming off the bench. I don't know that they have the pieces to do that right now, but that would, in my eyes, make Okoro a little bit more valuable, because then you'd get a one of the usage guys out of the starting five. Keep an eye on that. As far as games cap, roto games cap situations are concerned, LeVert is the only one where you're like, yeah, that's a definite burger board play. Niang is, again, specialist-y, and then Okoro is kind of coin flippy. Although I do sort of lean to yes on him, even after a bad ball game. Indiana beat Detroit, to no one's surprise. Detroit is missing a handful of people right now. If you're looking at the Indiana side and you're wondering what the hell happened here, first of all, blowout, so that's why the minutes are all cockamamie. And then Isaiah Jackson got 29 minutes, also because Miles Turner was in pretty significant foul trouble. Five fouls in 19 and a half minutes for Big Miles. TJ McConnell continues to rumble off the bench. He had six turnovers here, which, bad, but everything else is pretty much the way it's been. This is like his number now, 13 and 5, 13 and 6 with a steal or two. Can you dig it? I can dig it. And then Aaron Nesmith, who's like the softest hold known to man. If he plays, if this game required a fourth quarter and everybody got another 8 or 9 minutes, Nesmith probably puts up a good enough line to where I'm not having to say, can you barely hold on? Like, you know, 14 points a block, couple of three-pointers is not a bad starting point here. And if you added another basically 30% to his ledger, you're talking about, you know, another 4 points, another rebound, whatever it is. Like, whatever comes in that fourth quarter would have elevated him to a pretty clear nine-cat play. So Aaron Nesmith, I'm having a little marble mouth over here. Nesmith is a soft hold. Oh, boy. Rolling downhill, aren't we? For Detroit, Cade was back, and he looked pretty good. He's been quietly solid the second half of this season. He's never going to get to where anybody wanted him to be because he got drafted way too high. He's number 94 on a per-game basis, but at least that's better than where he was at the beginning of the year. I think he's been like 60-ish range the second half without checking, so that's fine. Jalen Duren, also a play, and That's pretty much where you leave it, because Jaden Ivey tends to be not a nine-cat guy when Cade is in, more of a points league-level dude. Ozar Thompson and Isaiah Stewart each got ruled out for the remainder of the regular season, which sounds terrifying, but it's basically 3 weeks, so it's like, it's not that long anymore for someone to be ruled out for the rest of season. Still, we hope that Thompson's all right. It sounds like his situation turned into a blood clot, or they said illness at first and blah, blah, blah. He's traveling with the team, is what Monty Williams said yesterday, so that's a good sign. Hopefully that means he'll be all right in short order, but there's no reason to push him back in there. Same deal for Isaiah Stewart, who's a little bit of a lunatic, but was a really nice schedule play here lately. So basically what you're doing is, if you're in Roto, you're sitting on Simone Fontecchio, because when he comes back, he's going to have a whole bunch of things to do, because the guys that were around him aren't going to be there anymore. There's no threat of Thompson coming back. There's no threat of Stewart coming back. So check your wire, see if Fontecchio's floating around. He's a must-stash guy on the Roto side. I get it. You can't really use up a roster slot on him in head-to-head. And then if you're looking at replacement-level dudes here, there just weren't any. Like, legitimately, look at the fantasy lines in this game. If Metu could get 30 minutes, I might say okay that direction. Wiseman would be the guy you'd look at, but that would require Duren to be down, who's like the one remaining healthy starter on this team for the moment. Stanley Umude left this ballgame early. He played close, like mid-20s in the previous ballgame, but he didn't do anything. So, nope. Tosan here, 30 minutes, don't care.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. Here's a competitive ball game. Sacramento beat Toronto by 34 points. Way to keep it close, Raptors. Keon freaking Ellis. Okay, wait a minute. Let's do the Raptors first, because I want to come back and scream Keon Ellis' name again, because we've been talking pretty highly, relatively highly, of him here on the podcast. As far as the Raptors go, we just need them to keep a ball game competitive, because right now, and like, you know, the amazing thing is, like, they're so shorthanded that a lot of the regulars had to get near 30 minutes anyway, even in a ball game that was long since over. So like, Gary Trent is an easy yes in every format. Kelly Olynyk is a yes for me in every format. Someone was like, oh no, Kelly Olynyk, he's falling apart. Dude, 9-3-4 with 2 blocks and a 3-pointer on good percentages. That's fine. If that's the bad game, awesome. We're okay. So those two guys are obvious yeses for me. And then there's a bunch of sort of semi-question marks. I think Bruce Brown is probably a yes because of his across-the-board production ability, but it's not locked in, and he might end up in the doesn't-matter group. But I feel like he's a doesn't-matter guy right now with a little bit of upside, because Emmanuel Quickley is out, and we have no idea when he's coming back. RJ Barrett is out. We don't know when he's coming back. I think it's personal for both of those guys. We know the RJ Barrett situation. We don't really know the Quickley one, which then makes you take one sort of sideways glance at Ochai Agbaji, who played 30 minutes and he did have 3 steals, but the other stuff was a bit lacking. He doesn't usually shoot all that much. He did take 10 in this game, which was kind of new and interesting. If suddenly he decides he wants to take 10 shots or more, then I'll get in on the Agbaji train. But until that time, I'm in sort of a holding pattern. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. Boston took care of Milwaukee without Drew Holiday. Oh, we forgot to go back to the Kings. Jeez, Dan, come on, get it together. And then after this, I'm going to get my water. So, you know, wait. For the Kings, this game was over early and was better reflected in the number of minutes that guys get. You know who gets punished when the Kings blow somebody out? Malik Monk, because he would normally play the end of the third quarter and then most of the fourth quarter. But instead, here, he played the end of the third quarter and then, like, the first 2 minutes of the fourth, and then he was just done because nobody needed to come back into the ballgame. So if you're worried about his minutes, it just has to do with rotations and blowout. Harrison Barnes left and then also came back, but who cares? I mean, Harrison Barnes is more of a schedule-level play. Davion Mitchell is, like, your deeper league schedule type of play. Monk is a go. Obviously, Fox and Sabonis are a go. And now let's talk about Keon Ellis, who a lot of people are going to look at this line and see 6 points and say, what on earth could be the reason that Dan is so ridiculously over the top excited about him? But in my eyes, the reason is incredibly clear. Keon Ellis is your next defensive whiz kid of the NBA. Over the last 2 weeks, he's averaged 25 minutes a game and 3.2 combined defensive stats, which, mind you, over an entire season, probably is unsustainable. I will very much give you that. Guys that put up these types of defensive numbers and give that type of defensive energy on every possession, which is sort of like a Jalen Suggs level defensive energy, those guys end up running out of gas at some point. We saw with Suggs too. You pay the price at some point for going that hard all the time. They end up going through a little bit of a slump, a fatigue slump. But the beauty of this situation is, we don't know how long Kevin Huerter's out. Another game or two, maybe more, maybe a little bit less. We don't know. But what the Kings need out of Ellis is this sort of short-term burst. He's probably not going to be their starter the rest of the way, although I wouldn't be that surprised if he ended up starting games in the playoffs when they needed him to lock down an opposing high-scoring guard threat, which a lot of teams in the Western Conference have. Like, I haven't looked at the standings lately. Where the hell are the Kings in the standings? Are they a sixth seed right now? Yeah, Kings are the sixth seed right now, so they'd have the Wolves to open it up. Not really a guard-heavy team, more of a wing and forward-heavy team. So maybe not the best example. Maybe you don't see a ton of Keon Ellis in that particular matchup because they don't need him to go lock down Mike Conley. But let's say the standings shift and the Kings fall back a slot to the seven, and then they come out of the play-in tournament and they have to play the Nuggets. You don't think they put Keon Ellis on Jamal Murray? I sure do. Oh, don't get Kevin Huerter just get toasted for a quarter before they make the switch? That seems nuts. But you guys don't care about the playoffs. You guys care about the right now. The reason I bring this up is because we're only talking about what ends up being about a four-week sample size, possibly that's like if Huerter missed the rest of the regular season, which I don't think the indication is that anything like that is about to happen. If we're talking about a two-week sample size, guys like Ellis can go full bore for that long without really paying the sort of energy tax on the tail end of it. Go nuts for 2 weeks. We can dial you back off the bench after that when the team gets healthy, whatever the situation may be. So I actually think that, and I don't know about five defensive stats in a ball game, but over three defensive stats in a game feels actually pretty sustainable for him in the very short term. 10 days, 15 days kind of thing. Does anything else happen? Well, that remains to be seen. If you're looking at sort of the recent numbers here for Ellis, over the last 2 weeks, he's at 7 points, three boards, which is like nothing, 1.5 three-pointers, and then the big defensive stats and basically no turnovers. So on five shots a game, by the way. And he took six in this ball game. Lo and behold, like if he gets a six or seven shots a game combined with the defensive stats, you're now talking about a guy that could actually put up top 50 super short-term numbers on the shoulders of over three defensive stats. And, you know, again, like six shots a game gets him to what? 8 points? 8.5 points? 1.5 to 2 3-pointers a game? That's all you need in 9-cat when someone's getting that many defensive stats. So that's why I'm so excited about it. And someone brought up a good point over on social media. They're like, what if he has a game where he only gets one steal and no blocks? Is it going to be a really bad game? Yes. Yeah. But you got to remember how things average out. He had a 5 defensive stat game here. Like, look at the dude's game log lately. Have we missed some of them? Maybe. Defensive stats for Keon Ellis over his last 5 games are 3, 4, 3, 6, and 5. If you think he averages out to just around 3 defensive stats, the 6 and a 5 basically means that there's a 0 coming up in there someplace. Or, you know, maybe a couple of ones or like a 1 and a 2 or something like that. That's going to bring the average back down to that more reasonable marker. But if you think Keon Ellis can go above that, then maybe you don't think there's as fast a fall off. Either way, Kings have a great schedule going right now on top of everything else. He's a guy that in my eyes could help you win 2 defensive stats, and I said this on yesterday's show, he's not going to like win you them by himself, but Sacramento also starts next week, front-loaded, a Monday, Tuesday, back-to-back. What if you got to start next, if your season continues and you're in your playoffs, what if you got to start next week with back-to-back Keon Ellis games, and he comes out and he gives you 6 steals and 2 blocks over those 2 games? What an amazing way to start your week. You put yourself in the driver's seat. You force your opponent to start thinking about categories maybe they weren't thinking about going for. I just think there's so many reasons to want to put Keon Ellis on your team. In my eyes, at least. I have him in a few spots. Frankly, I wish I had him in more. All right, I said I was going to get water after that one, so I'm going to get water after that one. And then we're going to talk Milwaukee and Boston. So sit tight, everybody. I'll be right back.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Milwaukee. There we go. No Giannis. Sorry for screaming in your ears, everybody. No Giannis, so that means Bobby Portis gets to go huge again, and he did. Chris Middleton looked pretty good. He'll sit out the back-to-back most likely. And so then you'll get a Malik Beasley game. But Beasley overall is trending down, which we kind of knew was going to be the case when Middleton came back, if you want to preempt it. For schedule play, folks, Milwaukee does have a good schedule next week because they go on the quality days. But in terms of like a games cap play, that's going to be a pass for me. Boston. No Jrue Holiday in this ballgame, so it sounds like he might actually be dealing with a real injury, which meant Peyton Pritchard now, boy, what a stream he's become in this 5-game and 7-day stretch for Boston. Two big games before Sam Hauser went down, or he might have also been in that same mix. And now Boston goes into another back-to-back starting tomorrow, where you know at least half of the starters, well, I shouldn't say at least half, but around half of the starters are going to sit out the front end, and the other half are going to sit out the back end of that back-to-back. Probably shouldn't refer to it as a back end. What's done is done. So Pritchard's going to crush, and Al Horford's going to be great in the one of those two games that he plays in. And that's probably about as far as you go with, you know, others on Boston. Maybe Luke Kornet has an okay game mixed in there, but Pritchard is a guy you can use in all formats for that back-to-back, in my opinion. Utah and Oklahoma City. There's nothing on the OKC side. They haven't had a fantasy note in forever. This ball game was over earlier than the final score might indicate. Even though if you look at the OKC side, you see Shea played 33 minutes. They basically left him in the ball game to get to 30 points. OKC's trying to run up his number of 30-point games. I think they want to try to get him up to that marker. Shea's averaging 30.9 on the year. And I think they want him to average 30. So whatever, they're doing what they're doing out there. The Jazz are the more interesting team here. And interesting, I mean extremely confusing. Walker Kessler's a start. Colin Sexton's a start. John Collins is a start. Lauri Markkanen, when he plays, is a start. Keontae George is generally a start, although you're going to get these hyper-inefficient games blended in. And because he doesn't get that many defensive stats, there isn't really a floor. So, shoomp. Down through the floor, deep down underground, he goes for some of these ball games. But I think George is generally a go. And then Taylor Hendricks is the guy you're looking at and sort of going, can I? He got 3 blocks in this one, which saved what was otherwise a relatively quiet line. And that makes me think, probably not. Roto games cap, I don't think I'm going to do it. In terms of like a nice scheduling spot, yeah, obviously Utah's had a good schedule going since Friday of last week. It rolls basically through the end of next week. That, you know, they'd 4 games this week, 4 games next week. And then with the two games at the end of last week, they, it's pretty well clustered. Not great, but I mean, it is pretty damn good. And then for this week, you know, they've got the second half of a back-to-back tonight, and then they play again on Saturday. If you wanted to get off of a Jazz, you could do so on Sunday, but it didn't save you all that much. Head-to-headers, fine. Rotoers, I think we gave you our names there already. Clippers beat up on the Blazers. This ball game again was not quite as close as it looked, although the regulars for the Clips mostly got normal minutes. It was good to see the regulars put up better ball games. Ivica Zubac finally had a better one. He tends to be kind of streaky, so maybe this is the start of a slightly better performance for him. The issue, of course, for Zubac right now is that the Clippers have all three of their centers healthy. So Zubac, Daniel Theis behind him, Mason Plumlee behind him, all of those guys are getting into these games. And then it becomes really hard for Zu to get more than about 25 minutes, which he needs to have fantasy value. He's sitting right now in the that no man's land, the doesn't matter area, in about 26 and change minutes per ball game, but he's been trending the wrong way, and that's the thing you got to be worried about. Over his last month, Zu's at number 130, and that was still, by the way, in around 26 minutes a ball game. For the last couple of weeks, he's at 25 minutes a game, thanks to some good percentages. He's also kind of holding in that 130 range. And then over the last 2 weeks, he's shooting 73% and 93% at the free throw line. So he's sort of overextending himself there. He's probably always going to be in that doesn't matter group. And then yesterday's game, he was actually slightly behind it, and then he had this big ball game yesterday, so he sort of bumped himself back into the doesn't matter group. I think that's where he sits. If you need big man stats, great. If you don't, you don't. He's right on that borderline. Do with him as you see fit. It's not going to kill you either way. And then for Portland, you got some truly awful games. DeAndre Ayton was bad. Anthony Simons was bad. You got a better game out of Chris Murray. Clap your hands if you saw that one coming. Not me. Delano Banton had 12 points, but it took him 12 shots to get there, so that was rough. Scoot at 18-5-2, that was a little bit better for him, at least. Jabari Walker had 12 points and a couple of steals. You have so many very risky, questionable, schedule-level guys on this Portland team, and you have just the two main starters that you should use against a Roto Games cap, Ayton and Simons. That's it. I think we're down to the last two here. Last two ball games. Yeah, last two. Philly. Worst game of the year for Tyrese Maxey. Coming in the head-to-head finals for me. Oh, I'm so annoyed about that. Kelly Oubre is off and rolling, though, these days. Didn't shoot the ball great, but had six more defensive stats, so he's coming along. And Paul Reed had five defensive stats and got 28 minutes. And I'm still like, there isn't much more I can say about Paul Reed other than that I have this weird sinking feeling. But yet he continues to do enough, and the minutes were better in this one, so that was good to see. He remains, I'll say the same thing I've said after, and this is why I need that page of fringy fantasy players where I just catalog how I feel about everybody. The blurb right now, if I were to write one on Paul Reed, is technically he's a start, period. I'm still worried about it, period, but technically he's a start, period. Kyle Lowry assists stream only. That's it. Phoenix got another whopper out of Grayson Allen. What a hell of a season that dude's had. Where's he ranked now in 9-cat? 52! Wow. Almost into the fourth round. 2.9 three-pointers a game, and he's shooting 51% from the field. To get that many threes from a guy who's helping your field goal percent is truly magical. I think there's only two dudes in the NBA that were doing it. It was Grayson Allen and Lauri Markkanen, who now has fallen off, actually. He's at 48% from the field. So I think Grayson Allen is the only player in the NBA hitting around three three-pointers a game and also shooting 50%. Yeah. Kyrie Irving is also right there. He's at 49%. But that's your guy. Grayson Allen, best combination of field goal percent and three-pointers in the NBA. Crazy. Start the starters. I know Bradley Beal had a bad ball game, but start the starters. That's it for Phoenix. Easy handicap. That was fun, wasn't it? Worthwhile game to look at. Memphis and Golden State. So Golden State, and actually both sides of this game have some stuff to talk about. For Memphis, we know they're playing their main guys against teams that are in the playoff hunt. They're trying to be sort of, I don't want to say spoilers, but they're trying to maintain the integrity of the closing run, and then it seems like they're more willing to bench their key guys against crapper teams so they can continue to lose those ball games. They've got the Spurs tomorrow, and we don't know what they're going to do because technically the Spurs are a crapper team. San Antonio 15-54, but they're 4-6 in their last 10. Among the crapper teams, the Spurs are basically playing the best in the NBA of all the tankos. So I don't know. Grizzlies might play some of their guys, but they really need to make sure they lose this game. Grizzlies are 23-47, and you know they're a half game behind the Raptors. They got to make sure they stay back of that. I don't know that they can fall far enough to drop behind the Blazers, who are also quite terrible, but they got to make sure that they don't accidentally pass someone. So who's going to play? I don't know. When they play reasonable competition, this is the lineup you're seeing, possibly plus Luke Kennard when he comes back. So Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., those guys are easy start decisions. When Luke Conchar is starting and playing 30-plus minutes, I'm pretty comfortable playing him. I know he didn't score in this game, but he still had 7 boards, 5 assists, and a steal, and usually he'll get you a three-pointer or another defensive stat. Conchar is an amazing punt points play right now. But I think he's generally good enough in the other stuff that even if you're not punting points, he sits inside the top 100. Santi Aldama, apparently I was way too early on being bullish on him last month because now he's finally figured it out. And the key seems to be that he needed to get better players around him so that he was a little more open because he's firing away all of a sudden, taking more shots now alongside the two big usage guys than he did when they were gone. G.G. Jackson scored 35 points. He's on a heater right now. Aldama's on a sort of a semi-heater as well, but he does more things across the board. Boards, assists, steals, blocks, stuff like that. Why am I kind of splitting hairs between these two guys? Well, with Aldama, if you have decent percentages, he becomes very, very good. For G.G. Jackson, when you have decent percentages, he becomes okay. Aldama sits a little bit higher than Jackson because of the across-the-board ability. Where Jackson is more about points and threes and very little else. And if the other stuff happens, it's massive gravy. But if it doesn't, then you see that sort of like we just saw with Keontae George. If the shots aren't falling, the line looks ugly really fast. Like very empty. So for head-to-headers, Memphis has kind of a crummy schedule, especially starting today. They play one game over 4 days. They have 3 games over 9 days coming up here, which is pretty clunky also. Not like the worst in the universe, but pretty bad if you were trying to schedule play someone like a Jake LaRavia or even a G.G. Jackson, frankly. You're probably looking for a team that's playing, say, 5 games over those 8 days. You get the 2 extra ball games in there. As far as games cap goes, would I... It's an old joke. I can't tell it because it's a little bit offensive. Would I play Aldama against the games cap in their next game against Wembanyama, maybe without the two mostly star-level guys? I'm going to say yeah. Would I play G.G. Jackson against the games cap? I'm going to probably say no. Although, gosh, if everybody's out and he's in there and he's taking 20 shots, how can I say no? You know, maybe I'll say yes on both of them for this next game against the Spurs. Don't know if Luke Kennard's going to be back yet. If he is and he starts, I would play Luke Kennard because you're probably going to get 10-plus points and you're probably going to get 6-plus assists on decent percentages with a bunch of three-pointers. Then I'd be a little more worried about Conchar, and you might see the regulars see their minutes ratcheted back in that ball game, even if they're not into a full rest game. So, like, let's say JJJ plays, he might only play 22 minutes. Or Conchar might only play 25 minutes instead of 33. Or Kennard might only play 25 minutes. So you got to be really careful in these games against other tanking teams for the Grizzlies. And that's why they're so hard to add on the head-to-head side. Roto, it's not that tough. You just bench him for a game. Worry about it the next time around, because I think next week the Grizzlies play all good teams. Nuggets, Lakers, Magic. Yeah. Week after that, they got two competitive teams and two non-competitive ones, so that would be a tougher one for some of these guys. And then the Warriors. Kuminga, nice ball game. He's a play every day. Chris Paul, double-doubled. He's a play every day. Klay and Steph are plays every day. And then you get into the fringier ones, which the fringier Warriors for me right now are Wiggins, Draymond Green, and Trayce Jackson-Davis, because Brandon Podziemski is officially a drop. This is the kind of ball game that's going to make them all look very good, because they put up 137 points against a team not playing any defense. Wiggins going for 22-10 is lovely, but he had had, I don't know how many games in a row before this, of relatively uninspiring basketball. Not bad, but uninspiring. Before he had his family thing, which sounds like it's not great. I think there was a report that like his brother left to go deal with family stuff as well. He was playing pretty good ball. You know, high teens in scoring, a couple of three-pointers a game, 4 or 5 rebounds, 2 or 3 assists. He was getting about a steal, a little more than a steal, a little less than a block. That was pretty good. He's come back from that, and while his minutes have come up, we haven't seen much beyond about 15 points and 4-ish rebounds. There sort of needs to be a little bit more. He has 5 steals over 8 games and only 2 blocks over those 8 games since coming back, so that hasn't really been enough. And then he sort of caught fire in this one. So I wonder, is this a game that wakes him up a little bit? They've got Indiana. That'll be a high-scoring game coming up, so maybe it's another opportunity for Wiggins. I think he's generally a little bit over-rostered. He's number 215 on the year. I know he's been better than that lately, 130 range over the last month. Wiggins probably falls into that doesn't-matter grouping, which, again, that's fine if you need some points and some rebounds and 1.5 threes and probably a steal. That's fine. But you're likely not going to get that many games like this where he sort of blows the roof off. You're going to mostly get games that are almost exactly like 15-5. And then every once in a while, you're going to get an 11-4 game. And then every once in a while, you're going to get a 20-9 game. And it's going to even back out to 15-5, basically. 15-6, something like that. So it's not bad, but it's not all that great. And then Draymond Green, he had 10-12-7 in this ball game, and he, at least in my opinion, is very much like a punt points level guy only right now. He's also in the doesn't matter fan club. It's pretty amazing, actually. I'm so glad I came up with that name for a group, because there's a lot of players in there where it's like, Dan, what should I do with this guy? Doesn't matter. Last month, Draymond is 157 because he's shooting 43% from the field instead of high 40s. That's the only difference. He goes back up to high 40s. He's at 8 points, 8.5 rebounds, and 6 assists with a little less than a steal, a little less than a block. When he shoots in the low 40s, it's at 7 points and 8 rebounds and 6 assists. And that's the difference between 120 and 160, basically. So Draymond, pretty much a punt points guy, very much a doesn't-matter level dude. And then Trayce Jackson-Davis, whose minutes have been sticking in the mid-20s. Now, admittedly, he got a couple extra here because the game was over. But it does seem like he's carved out a role in this range. He was awful at the free throw line yesterday, so he kind of tanked some teams with a 1-for-4. 13-5 with a couple of blocks would be pretty good if the free throws weren't a mess. But, you know, they'll, by and large, be probably not all that great. He's more, in my opinion, I don't think I'm using him against a Roto Games cap. Head-to-head, Warriors have a good schedule this week and next week and the week after that and the week after that. They run fours the rest of the day. So that's fine. You want to go Jackson Davis all fours down the stretch? I'm okay with that. But Roto, I don't think I'm quite there. If Kuminga or Draymond misses a game, I'd probably fire him up, get that extra 2-3 minutes, a few more big man stats on the Roto side too. But before that, I think I'd probably lean to no in Roto. Roto and head-to-head are so different right now. They're so different with the playoffs going on, the fantasy playoffs going on. Roto leaguers are sort of stat hunting at this point. You need your best guys in there, but you also need to be targeting specific categories, which is why we're doing two shows a day, frankly, because there's almost no overlap. Because you can't, you know, with Roto, if we get a team where there's like three guys ruled out at the last minute, there's an awesome opportunity for it for a guy to step into 35 minutes and way more usage. But on head-to-head, you can't use a roster move on that guy and then have to drop him the next day. You need to use your moves judiciously. You need to be adding games to your ledger. You use a roster move on one guy who's supposed to step into a big role and he doesn't, like, you've blown up your whole week. You need to be long streaming, unless your season ends in 4 days, in which case your long stream is 4 days long. Can't believe this week isn't even half over yet. I'm stressing, man. Finals week feels like it should be half over. It'll be half over when half of the games today are done. Take some deep breaths. Got some questions about Mitchell Robinson. Sounds like he's close. He participated in practice for the Knicks. I mean, they'll bring him along somewhat slowly here, so I wouldn't expect him to play more than about 17, 18 minutes in his first ball game. But he gets into the mid-20s, then he becomes a playable dude. So keep an eye on that. Head-to-head, you can't get out in front. Roto, check to see if he's on the wire. You could sort of stick him on your bench and get some juicy defensive stats mixed in there, some rebounds, some field goal percent. That's something to sort of consider in passing. What's the chat room got for us today? Let's see here. Is Brook Lopez droppable after this week? That's a little bit more of a streaming question. The answer is a hard no, because he plays all three quality days next week, meaning you might pick up somebody that's a four-game week going Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, but you might not be able to use them for any of them. So, no, hold on to all of your buckaroos and all of your peli screens. My kids have been watching Umizoomi. Those two teams play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday next week. Those are coveted teams for next week.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Why are JJJ and Bane doubtful on the injury status page? So that's the Basketball Monster injury page, by the way, and it's because they've been resting against bad teams. So that it's a guess that they rest against the Spurs. We don't know. Do I think Wemby, Jaylen Brown, or Zion rest on their back-to-backs? Zion has been resting periodically on back-to-backs, so I would keep one eye on him. Wemby's been playing theirs lately, and they've lost plenty of ball games, so I'm going to say that I think Zion probably, you know, the Pelicans are the five seed. They really don't want to fall back to the seven. I think if Zion is capable, they'll play him. Jaylen Brown will rest one half of the back-to-back. That one I feel quite comfortable with. Do you see Bam's injury being longer than a one-game absence? You know what? I don't know. They were able to win without him. We know the Heat do not rush guys back. That's just not their MO. If they go into the playoffs as the 10 seed, they don't even really care because they feel like they can get there. Trying to remember what I read on the Bam thing yesterday. I mean, backs are weird. I think at this time of year, you have to assume guys are out for more than one game, but and then get sort of pleasantly surprised if they're not. Certainly, if you're in head-to-head, you got to hold through tomorrow. If he gets ruled out for tomorrow, then you probably pick somebody up who still has two games the rest of the way. There's only one team that has three games left, and it's the Pelicans, and the options there for streaming are not particularly good. Okongwu's back again. Is Capella a soft hold? Yeah, Capella's a soft hold. He'll be just barely good enough. I'm okay with that. Chris Paul, Peyton Pritchard, or Keon Ellis? I don't know if we're talking head-to-head or Roto. If it's Roto and you're going rest of season, it's Chris Paul. If it's Roto for the next two ball games, it's Pritchard. I don't think Ellis wins this in Roto for me in almost any situation. For head-to-head, it's probably Ellis because his schedule's so good. For a tanking team, Spurs have been playing their players compared to the Wizards, Blazers, and Grizzlies. Yeah, I mean, the Wizards played their guys until, like, 4 days ago, so I don't want to give them too much heat. You know, the Grizzlies guys, they all got hurt, and then they started resting everybody. Yeah, I mean, the Spurs are playing their guys. I think they got tired of being the absolute bottom of the barrel, and they want to see a little bit of growth. There is something to be said for guys feeling better if they kind of grow towards the end of the year. But anything can happen. We're 3 weeks to the end. It's going to be weird, guys. Who do you like most for defensive stats? Keon Ellis, Isaiah Hartenstein, Onyeka Okongwu. It's probably Ellis for me, believe it or not. Should I drop OG Anunoby for Deuce McBride? Well, if you're in your playoffs, you probably have to drop Anunoby because I think they said they expected him to miss a couple of ball games, and you really can't take zeros. I don't know about McBride starting all of them for the Knicks. I think there was a little bit of a matchup thing happening there where they were the Warriors' last ball game, right? Yeah, so they had a key defensive matchup at the guard spot that they wanted McBride on. They might go bigger against the Nuggets. Kind of have to wait and see later on tonight what their starting lineup looks like. Najee Marshall worth an ad for streaming? Yeah, I mean, yeah, kind of. You know, he's got 3 games in 4 days here. So basically, and then they also play on the light days next week. And then you just like pray because they got a great schedule coming up. Six games over 10 days? My bad. But 3 of those games are bonus days next week. And you got the 3 and 4 this week where you don't have any overflow. And so, you know, you just hope that you get something out of it. And that'll wrap us up. Fun stuff coming up later on today. We'll have our streaming show probably in the early afternoon. Also recording a segment with Ryan Ward today, who's a Lakers reporter at Lakers Nation. He also hosts a Lakers podcast also, like us, on the Believe Network. And we'll get some thoughts on what's going on with the Lakers, if you might expect someone like a Jared Vanderbilt back in the near future, if Gabe Vincent can carve out a role, if there's anybody else on that team that might be worth keeping your eyes on. So that'll be fun. I'm going to have to learn some stuff from a tech standpoint, but we'll probably try to get that edited into some kind of future show. I think I can share a video on these things, but we may be figuring that out on the fly. Anyway, that'll probably pop up on, my guess would be tomorrow, or one of tomorrow's shows. So stay tuned for that. Pretty excited about hanging out with Ryan. And again, make sure to subscribe, follow, like, subscribe, all that stuff. If you're over on Twitter, consider subscribing on YouTube so you can actually get much more easy alerts for when these things drop. Then you can also go back and watch them later. Twitter, if you miss it, you kind of miss it, which is annoying because it's not going to be like, oh, Dan did a video 3 hours ago. You want to go back and watch it? I wish it would. That'd be cool. Maybe they'll add that feature in the future. But again, if you're watching on Twitter, and there are a lot of you doing so right now, click on over to the YouTube deal. We're just Sports Ethos on YouTube. YouTube.com/SportsEthos. You can subscribe there. That's an easy way to get it. It'll look exactly the same as what you're watching right now. Or if you don't mind listening to stuff after the fact, traditional pod channels. That's also the best way for us to make ad dollars, so would very much appreciate it if you guys subscribed over on traditional pod channels. You can listen on, you know, 1.5 or 2x or whatever it is, and that'll power the locomotive over here. So again, follow at Dan Besbris, DanBesbris. Check out our baseball draft guide. NBAers, upgrade to the All Sport to get baseball and football in your package as well. Just $2 to upgrade for a limited time. And I will talk to you guys a little bit later on today. So long for now.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.